So this morning I'm going to talk about the first section of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, which is called Right Practice. And right away, Suzuki Roshi talks to us about posture. And he has quite a lot of detail about the posture, but I'm just going to read one paragraph and comment on it. He says, "You should not be tilted sideways, backwards, or forwards. You should be sitting straight up as if you were supporting the sky with your head. This is not just form or breathing. It expresses the key point of Buddhism. It is a perfect expression of your Buddha nature. If you want true understanding of Buddhism, you should practice this way. These forms are not a means of obtaining the right state of mind. To take this posture itself is the purpose of our practice. When you have this posture, you have the right state of mind, so there is no need to try to attain some special state." So before this, he talks about how we should sit, if we're sitting on a cushion or on a chair. He talks about taking the two sides of the body and folding them as we fold our legs to create one body. And then he goes into detail about how to hold our hands. And then he says this about sitting upright. That phrase, sitting upright, is the name of Reb Anderson's book about the precepts. And one of the things about Suzuki Roshi, as I've seen as I've delved back into this book after so many years, is how he combines form and the precepts and practice itself all together into one whole, one full way of living. I remember when I first read this book and I didn't know anything about Zen, I was very impressed by this chapter on posture because I had never really thought about posture before. And this was before I met my first Zen teacher who helped me learn about how to sit. But what I took away from reading Suzuki Roshi was the importance of actualizing the practice of awakening in the body. And it never went away for me. I always felt when I took the upright sitting posture that this was a complete practice in itself. Before I knew anything about breath practice, about shikantaza, about koans, I knew this, and I've realized over the years and even more recently how much this reliance on the upright body is a part of my own teaching. Now, Suzuki Roshi also says, and I've said many times, that we can sit in very many ways, and we can lie down to meditate, we can stand, we can walk. In one of the Buddha's original talks, he talks about the fact that there are only four postures for meditation, and they are those four that I just mentioned: moving, lying down, sitting, and standing. Suzuki Roshi says later in this chapter that it's important to hold this posture all the time. And I remember as a young woman trying to do that. When I would read in bed at night, I tried to sit up straight. And when I walked, I tried to stand up straight. And when I sat in a chair, I tried to sit up straight. And I think that lasted about maybe 3 or 4 days. And then I went back to my usual slumping and inattention. But over the years of practicing, I have appreciated so much what happens to me when I actually sit down on my seat. I once went to a conference when I was pretty young in the practice. I think I'd only been practicing 5 or 6 years, and it was a conference held at the Providence Zen Center of women teachers. And there was one teacher, and I think her name was Geshen, but I can't really remember the rest of her name, and it's a long, complicated name. Some friends of mine had known her somewhere else. She was a German woman who had ordained as a nun, as a woman priest. And she read the beginning of one of the sutras of the Buddha. And the sutra begins something like, the Buddha made his seat and sat down. And then, of course, the sutra goes on to give his marvelous, wonderful teachings. But Geshen said that all of the teachings of the Buddha are in this first line. Thus have I heard once the Buddha made his seat and sat down. This is the first thing we teach newcomers. We ask them to sit upright and still. And in the spirit of the beginner's mind, this is something that we continually emphasize to everyone who comes to sit with us, even if they've been sitting for decades. Remember to sit upright. The mechanics of the body are helpful here. The mechanics of letting your pelvis be evenly spread on your seat so that it takes most of the weight. If you're sitting in a chair, to have the feet flat, the pelvis is tilted, and the back is sitting upright, not leaning back as we tend to do when we sit on chairs. But it assumes its natural curve, the S curve, where the lower spine is indented a little bit and the upper spine is rounded. If we turn that into what we call a C curve, it eventually will hurt our backs. It's easier to sit on the floor for some of us, but not all of us. And so sometimes we sit kneeling. And the same thing happens. The pelvis, the sits bones are even. The knees are holding the weight equally, and the spine rises up. And Suzuki Roshi is very explicit about what happens next. And the shoulders relaxed, the chest is open, the head is balanced on the neck, and the chin is a little bit tucked so that the ears are in alignment with the shoulders. He says specifically in one place that if your head is going up, you'll have a tendency to daydream. If it goes too far down, you'll have a tendency to fall asleep. So finding this alignment is important. This is the form of the alignment. But what he's talking about in the paragraph that I just read is the spirit of the alignment. We're not doing this to do the right thing. We're doing this because in finding a way to balance our body, we also find a way to balance our heart mind. And he says that this is the whole thing. It's everything. The Buddha makes his seat and sits down. And we, Buddhas, we awakened ones who do not know that we're awakened, we do the same thing. This is why we make such a big deal out of entering the Zendo and bowing. One of you was telling me about going to a Zen center someplace where you had to enter the Zendo with a specific foot. This is part of the Soto tradition, actually, to be so attentive to the body. We are a little bit looser here, but you may have noticed or you may not have noticed that we always start walking meditation with the left foot. This is a holdover from our Soto heritage of paying precise attention to everything. One of the things that that does is it prevents us from getting too far ahead of ourselves, because the mind will rush forward into the future. But that one foot stepping, that's the whole thing. So we come into the Zendo, we bow in the direction of the Buddha altar, and this is the whole thing. We don't just bow to get it over with so we can get to our seat. We bow because bowing is the whole practice. We bow to the Buddha altar and our body inclines and then comes back upright. We put our hands in the position for walking and we walk deliberately to our seat. We actually feel each step so that we're not missing anything. The point is not to bow and then get to our seat as fast as possible. The point is to bow and have bowing be everything. Then have walking be everything. And then we turn to our cushion, which has been waiting for us. Or maybe it's our meditation bench or our chair. And we bow to it because it is the vehicle of the Dharma. It's the great teaching. It's this teaching of the Buddha. It's this teaching of Suzuki Roshi saying that the sitting is everything. And we bow in gratitude and acknowledgement that our seat is waiting for us. There's a place for us in the world, at least for now. And then we turn around, and in that turning around, maybe we're the first person to enter the Zendo, and the Zendo is empty. We turn around, and there are other seats across from us, and maybe there are people there. And we bow in gratitude to all the other seats waiting to hold the six bones of others, to hold the bodies of other Buddhas. So this form level of practice is not about right and wrong. It's about embodying the way of awakening fully. And then we sit down and we make some adjustments. And in traditional Soto form, you'll see sometimes if you go to a traditional Soto Zen center, like the San Francisco Zen Center, that people will rock on their seats. They'll rock forward and back and side to side because they're trying to find that balance. Not too far forward, not too far back, not too far to the left, not too far to the right. This is how Suzuki Roshi begins this little section. And if we're too far to the back or too far to the front, it puts a strain on us. It's harder to sit still. Too far to the left, too far to the right. So we find that balance. We plant our feet on a blanket or on the floor, or we cross our legs or we kneel, and we find that we can also balance our legs. This is not about right and wrong, but really finding a vehicle for this awakened nature to manifest itself. At first we do it because we're told that it's what we're supposed to do. But after a while we find that something else happens, a kind of aligning with the reality of the universe. We sit upright and still. We don't move even if something is a little bit painful. We move if something is extremely painful or if we have to sneeze or cough. But other than that, we don't yawn, we don't sigh, we don't fool around with our breathing. We just sit upright and unmoving, expressing the awakened nature as best we can. You should not be tilted sideways, backwards, or forwards. You should be sitting straight up, as if you were supporting the sky with your head. This is not just form or breathing. It expresses the key point of Buddhism. It is a perfect expression of your Buddha nature. If you want true understanding of Buddhism, you should practice this way. These forms are not a means of obtaining the right state of mind. To take this posture itself is the purpose of our practice. When you have this posture, you have the right state of mind, so there is no need to try to attain some special state. Thank you. So now, making yourselves comfortable. but maybe you want to just keep sitting. So I think you all know that this is the time for our Dharma dialogue. So questions, observations about your practice, maybe related to the talk I just gave, or maybe related to anything else that's coming up for you.
So sitting, standing, laying down, walking is all dead, right?
Yes.
So apparently everything is everything,
yes.
Right?
Isn't that great? We used to say that was the Buddha's little joke. You know, he had quite a sense of humor. So there are only four postures. What else is there? Yeah, and that's it. That's right. That everything we do. So when we're driving a car, lying down to bed, brushing our teeth, walk, everything. Everything is the vehicle. Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah,
it's
amazing.
Yeah, it is. It amazes me. I remember somebody once in a Dharma dialogue saying, but there must be some exception. You know, can't I get off the hook? No. And even now, you know, as some of us ease our posture, you might just want to take a moment and notice, did your mind change? You know, right? Isn't that something? I mean, it's really amazing to me. You know, and so, of course, we have to rest our bodies. So you don't have to be like soldiers all the time, but just to be awake to this and to the interstices, the in-betweens, you know, like bowing, like sitting down, like standing up. That's it, too.
I've really noticed that lately in being with friends and how my body is with them totally shapes just where my mind goes in the conversation. You know, I feel like if I get like bored with a conversation, the eyes like start to like drop down, and maybe I like slump over this way a little bit, and I can feel my whole like, I don't know, it just seems like I'm not in it anymore. But I notice when I get like most intent on a conversation now, it's like I immediately like square down, like things get like stable, and then we like have this just very active kind of dialogue ensue. And, you know, I would like for that all the time. Because I feel like I want to give everyone that kind of time of day, but I guess it's hard to.
Relax.
Yeah. Well, and Melissa, I liked what you said about your 3 days of being upright. Yeah, I think we've all gone through that. With, all right, I will have good posture now for the rest of my life. And how everything can be too much. You know, we talk about the middle way. So if you walk around all the time, it doesn't work, right? So there is this kind of flexibility and this awareness and how to not to cling to some idea. So the posture can be another idea that we cling to. We think, okay, now I know what to do. I've got it. She just told me. I did. And then we get caught in that idea. So to hold this and to feel the wisdom of and the beauty of this upright posture, and then also the beauty of slumping when it's time to slump, or appreciation of the bending over and that mind as well.
And I think really, really sensing into what it feels like to make these different postures. You know, just like we sense it, like it's not all, we don't just sit always in bliss, right? Right? that sometimes there are states of mind and heart that just rise up, or our minds are going a million miles a minute. The idea is not to make any of that stop, but to really know it intimately. So, oh, slumping is happening. I'm in a conversation with a friend and I'm just, my head's hanging and I've got my forehead in my hand, and then somehow right in the middle of that going, huh, this is interesting. I had a friend who was a mindfulness teacher who used to teach walking meditation by having everybody just walk regularly, and then she would say, now everybody lean forward. and try to walk. And it was amazing because what it did, the brain changed. Everybody wanted to get someplace. And then she had everybody lean back, and it was like really hard to walk, but there was kind of an arrogance that arose. it was amazing, all these different things. So what David's saying, not to only be one way, but to feel the fullness of being human, but to be awake in that fullness of being human, that's the little difference that makes the vast difference.
This is resonating for me because I'm a singer, and when I was a kid, I was super nerd, you know, science, and was just hunched over, didn't do any sports. And so when I went to learn how to sing, went to music school, it was like, oh, you need to stand up straight. And it took me years of like, oh, I gotta do that. And I mean, literally probably 4 years of this. So, you know, Yogi Alexander technique eventually learned, okay, if I do these, I'll stand more. But it was still like another 4 years after that of a, and now it's over the last few years being, okay, well, my body's here, just let it be.
Yeah.
And a theme for me, actually, these couple of days I've been here is, instead of saying, oh, well, I'm going to put my posture and my breath this way to get this state of mind, I'm going to say, let me notice my posture and my breath as they change, and what does that tell me about my actual reaction to the thought I had, not what I think the reaction is?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Yeah. So that's that being present. Like, it's all here, and we don't have to pretend that we're in charge. So that we get to discover what's actually happening. So if you're having a boring conversation with a friend, that is the Dharma manifesting as exactly what needs to happen. Everything doesn't have to be wild and exciting and intimate. It can be, but when we're present to it, then it's just, wow, here it is, this life. Yeah. Great.
And it's natural.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have to exaggerate in order to get to the naturalness. I think that's what you're pointing to also. Yeah, Laura?
Kind of following what you're saying about the conversation being boring and the posture happening from that, I've had these experiences where I want my posture to get better, and I'm like, that's asking too much, you know, this is asking too much, I'm tired, it's the only reason my body's like this. But then I would find that actually the energy it took to get back up more upright, then it would give back equally, if not kind of more, would actually bring that. So when I was thinking about, you know, the boring conversation, maybe the conversation even itself isn't boring, but as the posture gets more upright, the conversation changes. So that's just kind of where I was thinking with that.
Yeah.
It's just that it wasn't just one thing and then I'll get this, but just this kind of cyclical feeling that I got things back from.
Yeah.
Well, right. Suzuki Roshi is really clear that we don't do this to get something else, right? And that's what you're discovering, just through that experience. And so it's to be with things the way they are. But it doesn't mean that we just don't do anything. We still experiment and do things. It's not logical. Mm-hmm. It brings these two sides together.
And it is the one exception. We say don't move, but if you find yourself in the middle of a round like this, then we do come back. And actually, of course, it's cyclical. It's always wandering away and coming back. That is the opening and the closing. It's not a problem at all.
I just wanted to I have similar experiences to what's been talked about, but I must say I find it more difficult in some ways to change your habitual body posture movement than your mind. I've actually been concentrating on it. That was sort of one of my focuses, because my shoulders are always up and like, you know, ready to go, ready to take on the world. And so I say, every time I sit down from walking, I say, okay, notice where your shoulders are, and then I sort of drop them. And I would say within a second, I know it's sort of back up again. I mean, I think it's a kind of body memory. It gets to be so better. It's very difficult. But I think it's still really valuable, even if I don't ever change it on an ongoing basis, because I'm so aware that when I'm like this, it does feel really different. And just to sort of let go, but I can't stay in that for more than a second or two before.
Right. Well, and it's a form of clinging, actually. You know, that human beings, we're such good learners. Our brains are great. We learn stuff. And then it becomes familiar to stand this way or sit this way. And it's as you say, it's very hard to change. And the idea is not to change, but to keep noticing, maybe make an adjustment, because there are ways to sit that are more comfortable than others. Like real slight changes. I remember we had a retreat. I don't know if any of you were here for it. No, you weren't. We had a special group come in, and this woman was talking about how her neck and shoulders just were so painful, and sitting was just terrible for her, and it was impossible, and she tried all the different things and nothing worked. And in a Dokusan, you know, I actually talked to her about it, and I said, would you mind if I just like played around with your neck and shoulders a little bit? And she was like so stiff, you know, really clinging to this horrible, oh my God, if I tried to do it, it would really hurt. And was really, really, really tight. And I just put my fingers on her neck and said, could you just feel this spot and just move it like a 16th of an inch forward? And she did. And she said, well, that didn't work. I said, okay, that's all I ask. Just focus on that little place at the end of the retreat. She raises her hand, and David and I are like, oh no, what's going to happen? Because she had a lot of difficulties. She said, I just want to say that I experienced a Zen miracle. and it turned out for the rest of the retreat, she'd just been focusing on that little place, felt it tight and felt it loosen. And then it changed everything. Like that, so it's as much. It's not that we're doing it in order to change it. The telling the story is a little tricky because it sounds like that. But the point is to be just really, really interested in these little minute things, and also to ask for help. To ask for help. We used to have this experience when we taught down at the Unitarian Church on Main Street. We had everyone sit in a circle. And we would go around and give people massages. They would hold up their hands and we'd massage them and then correct their posture. You know, if somebody was sitting back in a chair, we'd put them. And what I loved was I would go to the next person and then out of my peripheral vision see the person that I just worked with just go right back. It's totally the same as what you're talking about. And I really do think it is some form of self-protection. It's familiar. It's familiar. So to take the risk to just maybe focus on one little thing could be really interesting. No guarantees, because this is not about achieving results.
Could we go back to having massages?
Yeah, really. Yeah. Only the special groups.
Right. Yes.
In the reading, you mentioned the four postures, the fourth being lying down. And I wonder does that ever happen in a group setting? Is that an individual thing? Or is that in the practice?
On occasion, there might be someone lying down in the meditation hall. I once did a 7-day retreat with someone who couldn't sit, literally couldn't sit. And so she was an advanced practitioner and did the retreat lying down. It's extremely difficult to do because the mind tends to know what to do when you go horizontal. Hey, time off! So we find that energetically, it works much better when we take the sitting posture. But when there's no choice, and when you're lying down in the hospital bed or in your bed or somewhere else, there's not a problem. Then we meditate with where we are. Yeah.
And I've seen statues of Buddha lying on his side. Is that a variant on that, or is that just a artistic representation?
It's actually the posture he took when he died.
Oh,
And in pop culture, it's become the reclining Buddha, but it's really the dying Buddha. Yeah. So the idea, and there are actually instructions in some of the older Buddhist texts on how to sleep. You're supposed to sleep on your right side, like he does in those. But you know, those statues are the dying Buddha. And that's not a bad thing, right? Because we all are going to die, as David just said. You know, that this practice that we're doing here, where we're still, there's going to be some point when we don't have a choice. You know, we're sitting here now and think, oh, if only I could scratch my ear. But boy, there's going to be a time, maybe for some of us, for a lot of us, when we won't be able to even raise our hand. So this is practice for that. Also, the other great side effect of this is if you ever have to have a CAT scan or an MRI, you'll get a lot of praise from the technicians. Wow, you're so still. Because we really know how to do that. Some practitioners.
Yeah. Mark? I had a quick thought about what you were saying, just before, about you're saying it's a clinging, you're saying, well, we don't want to change it. One way to think about it maybe would be, it's almost like your body's karma. The muscles in your mind have memory. I mean, there's a reason maybe these muscles are stronger from years of activity or from stress or whatever. And so just noticing and knowing, oh, well, there's a reason it's like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Not that you can't change it, but there is. It's reflecting your history.
Yeah, and I think so important to whatever we meet to know that there's some good reason for it. Mm-hmm. And usually we think we're bad or wrong in some way. And I think much kinder to that, of course, you know, this is how we are right now. And we don't have to go into that. We don't have to even know why. We can assume that, all right, and then meet that. And then this middle way we're talking about, that we really do encourage all of us to take this upright posture, and then how to find what right effort is, because trying harder is not helpful, right? So, but not really putting yourself into it is not helpful. So how to take this posture that's not rigid, so tensing all your muscles is not the way to find it, but you know, falling off the other side is not the way. So where is this middle ground? And Laura, I loved what you said, that there can be this energy, mm-hmm. and in fact we need to have that energy that is not ours. And one of the things guaranteed to happen on retreat is you run out of your own energy. Whatever you think your great motivation or energy is, at some point it will go. That's a wonderful time, because then you can't rely on the old strategy, of mind or body. And we have to throw ourselves on the mercy of the universe. And then, of course, our practice is trying to find this life that does not belong to the little self, but this life that we are a part of that, of course, sustains us even now. But when we find that, then we are not sitting. There is not someone who is doing the activity, but the activity is doing the activity. Oh, Zazen is doing Zazen. Sitting is doing sitting. No problem.
Yeah, Parnell.
I do appreciate the wisdom of simply being with the posture. And yet, as I grow older, I have the shoulders, I have the neck, I have the whole business. And the temptation is to say, I'm getting older, this is the way it is. But I don't buy it. I think it is important to be curious, as you have often told us, and say, what's the deal? What's happening here? Why are my shoulders like this? You know, why the neck? Why? And the obvious answer for me is, I don't have enough strength in my core. And so when we go for help, you know, we go to teachers, we go to physical therapists, yeah. and we say, yeah. help yes. me, yes. help me to change this. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to appreciate the opportunities that we have for change, mm-hmm. and to be analytical enough, I guess, to figure out, what is the problem here? Yeah. And do something about it, even if we possibly can.
And that is a perfect description of the middle way again. Mm-hmm. That so you want to be really curious. That is the middle way. The reality of these bodies, like the karma that we're all carrying, every single body in this room, everyone we meet, has a history that's accumulated, and some of it's genetic and some of it's historic for us. So there are things we can't do anything about. You know, the color of our skin, how tall or short we are, certain genetic predispositions towards this, that, or the other thing. And then there's a lot of wiggle room beyond that. So, and that's where we have to be discerning. What can I actually do here? What is impossible? There's a famous Zen teacher, Bernie Glassman, who has a real problem with his upper back. I think he's sort of hunchbacked if you look at him. And there's pictures of him as a young man sitting all slouched over, but that was as straight as he could be. So within his limitations, or within, limitations is the wrong word, within his reality, he sat upright. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's what we do. And reaching out for help. There's so many people who know stuff. And that little 16th of an inch, it all through the body. And we also can't fight reality. Right? There are things that we just can't make different. I was reading a science fiction book recently about people who go through this transformation where they essentially die in the middle of their lives. They're dead, but they're still living. And every time they injure themselves, they can't heal. You know, so if you stub your toe, that's it for eternity. Your toe's going to hurt. You imagine that. And I love the metaphor of it because it's just not true. You know, we live with the results of it, but things do appear to heal. So to be aware of the capacity of the body to change within limits, that's really important. Jason, you've had your hand up.
The posture expressing, you know, all of reality. We talked about that aspect of it. And then it occurred to me, like, in these descriptions, you read Dogen and this and different, you know, they could have talked about a different, you know, it could be talking about this and still all of reality. I mean, it's right, still right. That aspect of it. But I think, you know, not only the energetic part of it, you know, it really keeps you alert and but also the, you know, emphasizing the not leaning forward, leaning back, leaning in any way, the you know, in terms of the mind, but then also you mentioned the Reb Anderson thing, being upright, his book, that the posture, and I think it never occurred to me that, but for him it's the most essential. I mean, he's saying that is an embodiment of upright behavior and of that aspect of Buddhism and of so that it follows, you know that they, not only are you you know, practicing to know reality and be reality or something like that, but that you know, right behavior will kind of come. Well,
yeah, well, this not leaning forward, not holding back in our life. So in the conversation, in daily work, if we try too hard, we're in trouble. If we're leaning to the left, trying to avoid it. So this being upright in the middle of, and so we practice it here on the cushion in this way. But Reb Anderson was, of course, studied with Suzuki Roshi, was the Dharma heir of his Dharma heir. but really deeply understanding and sharing what you're saying. This being upright is being upright, now manifesting in the physical form, but manifesting and, you know, walking to the kitchen in daily life. Yeah,
I think some of us we're talking about how that can be. You know, for me, sometimes I'm always wondering now what is the best behavior for me in my practice, and it can get so convoluted. But this simple of what happens if you just make yourself upright, and what arises from that, you know, what way of responding to being in the kitchen, to the talking with somebody else, that simple thing, what happens from
So, now that we all know what practice is, we're going to do some more of it.